If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim Miller from The Bulwark. I was on with Alicia Menendez today, and we were just kind of batting around all the different strategies Republican candidates have been taking for messaging and dealing with the crappy Trump economy. While I'm mentioning crappy, what I accidentally said on TV was how they are trying to shine the turd of Trump's economy. I try not to mention turds when I'm on cable. I try to save that for you guys here on Substack and YouTube. But that's neither here nor there. Essentially, we discussed how, you know, there was Tim Scott. One strategy he tried over the weekend on Meet the Press, which is blaming everything on Joe Biden. Oh, look over there, it's Joe Biden. Greg Abbott was on ABC this week, and he was refusing to give Trump a grade on the economy. Tom Cotton, a senator from Arkansas, is like trying to slowly distance himself from Trump's trade war. I don't think that's going to work. And, you know, the gist of this is that, like, the underlying economy is bad. Prices are worse because of the decisions Trump made, because of the Iran war, and because of the tariffs. Things are more expensive. And so when the underlying facts are bad, you know, it doesn't really kind of matter what the messaging is to spin them, especially when it's on an issue that people experience in their real everyday lives. Like, if they're seeing prices go up, it doesn't really matter what, like, some senator says, okay? Like, they're not going to buy the BS. And so Republicans, knowing that they don't have a great, you know, story to tell on the economy, are going back to some of their more nefarious tactics for how they try to win elections from a messaging standpoint. They're relying on bigotry and racial animus on the one hand. And then they've added a little kicker on it this time, particularly in the Michigan Senate race, which is they are participating in bigotry and racial animus while also accusing the other side of being the bigots and saying, hey, it's the Democrats that don't like Jews. The Democrat candidate is anti-Semitic. So they're doing the racist stuff while also trying to wear the white hat and win over people who are concerned, for good reason, about rising anti-Semitism. They're trying to do both at the same time. It's a strategy that's probably not without some effect, and maybe could work in a different year. I'm pretty skeptical that it's going to work in the Michigan Senate race this year. As I've said, I just think that the Trump numbers are so bad, Eddie, that a Republican who lost to Alyssa Slotkin in 2024 on the same ballot that Trump won, Mike Rogers, white bread Mike Rogers, is going to like win in a wave year. I find it hard to believe. And I think Abdul is underserved. But we'll see on that. You still got to run a campaign. And I want to lay out for you kind of the tactics that these guys are using, both with smearing Abdul El-Sayed and his supporters, and then also kind of leveling accusations and doing projection at the same time. I want to start with a story that really got my blood pressure up, because Rogers' allies are advancing really nasty and false personal smears against a guy that I know just because he has a Muslim name and he donated to Abdul El-Sayed. That's it. And there was a coordinated campaign going after him, everyone from Laura Loomer to this anonymous group that's allegedly Democrats from Rogers. We'll see if they ever put a face on who they are, the Democrats for Rogers, and, you know, other kind of right-wing fake news outlets in Michigan. So I want to tell you about this story, and I just want to tell you what the truth is and defend the honor of a good man, Muhammad Sultan. Essentially what happened here, there is this supposed news outlet called the Midwesterner, which looks basically like a Michigan Republican Party Oppo research shop disguised as a newspaper. I'm sure that's probably what it is. And it wrote this story with this headline: Egyptian sentenced to life for funding Muslim Brotherhood, giving money to Abdul El-Sayed's U.S. Senate campaign. Muhammad Sultan was sentenced by an Egyptian court for life in prison in 2015 after spending 2 years behind bars alongside his father, Salah Sultan, a leading figure in the Muslim Brotherhood. This is how these things go, right? They just put out scary words, and it's like, oh, scary Muslim Brotherhood, sentenced to life. He must have been a bad guy. Well, let me tell you what actually happened in the story of Muhammad Sultan, somebody that I worked with on nonprofit stuff for a while. Muhammad is an American citizen. He grew up in Ohio. Maybe his biggest sin here is that as an Ohioan, he's engaging in the Michigan Senate race at all. But this is not an Egyptian man. It's an American citizen, went to high school here, is here legally. And so you can try to smear him as an Egyptian, as a foreigner, all you want, but foreigners can't contribute to American campaigns. So that's number one. So the headline is wrong. What was he sentenced to life for? They make it seem like the Egyptian courts, the very fair Egyptian courts, sentenced him for some Muslim Brotherhood-y terrorist activity. No. You remember there are a lot of revolutions in the Middle East that were happening during the Obama years. Starting with, I guess, the Green Revolution in Iran, and it kind of spread throughout the region. And in Egypt, there's a revolution going after the fascist dictator that ran the country. Sultan's family is from there. As mentioned, his dad was a political activist. We don't blame people in this country for the political activism of their parents in another country, but he was in the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And he went back to Egypt, to his home country, to participate in these protests. He gets nabbed by the Egyptian police and put into a prison and tortured for 2 years. Tortured. In large part, I assume, because of who his father was. He was there hoping for freedom to be brought to his ancestral homeland. Something you would think that Mike Rogers and the kind of neocon right would be excited about. So he finally gets out, comes back to America, and I encounter him where he is an advocate for people wrongly imprisoned throughout the world, and particularly in, you know, the Middle East. But his advocacy was for people who were wrongly imprisoned for expressing political views. This is noble work. This is honorable work. This is fundamentally American work. I was really proud to be able to help Muhammad with that. And as part of that work, he has been a supporter and donor of politicians in America on both sides, particularly kind of in the pre-Trump era, when this was something that both parties valued, who had politicians that would advocate for the rights of people that were wrongly imprisoned because of their political beliefs. So he supported candidates, both Republican and Democrat. He's donated to both. And that is something that's totally in line with his background, with the horrible experience that he went through, with his ideals. So fast forward to this campaign and the Rogers allies, what do they see? They just see, oh, scary Muslim name, Muhammad Sultan. Muslim Brotherhood, some vague Muslim Brotherhood connection. Oh, he's imprisoned in Egypt. Life, they give him life in prison. He must have done something really bad. It must be a terrorist, right? We're kind of implying terrorism. Actually, he's a brown name, might have been a terrorist. And so because he donated to Abdul El-Sayed, the Republicans are now smearing him, going after his integrity, kind of doing this wink nod, he might be a terrorist thing, and saying that maybe Abdul also is, you know, a terrorist or involved in this guy's nefarious activities. So, like, what essentially the Republicans here are doing are kind of extending the fascist oppression that Muhammad Sultan had thrust upon him by the Egyptian autocracy, and the same oppression that he has been fighting against on behalf of people of any race and religion who have been wrongly imprisoned. It is really sick. It's really sick. And it's maddening and it's disgusting. And Laura Loomer was doing it. And as I mentioned, and, you know, as Mike Rogers said it, no, but like I said, these are all his cutouts. These are all his surrogates. And as we get to the next topic, while Mike Rogers is trying to force Abdul to answer for every supporter he's ever had, why doesn't Mike Rogers have to answer for this? Like, why doesn't Mike Rogers have to answer for the fact that his allies are smearing and lying about a person who was wrongfully imprisoned, tortured, and came out the other side and came back to our country and is the type of American that we should all be proud of. Somebody that was fighting for the fundamental values and principles that this country was founded on. That's Mohammed Sultan. And Mike Rogers's disgusting allies are trying to turn him into a terrorist because of his name. It's really gross and it's really upsetting. And anyway, if I was a journalist in Michigan that was on the Mike Rogers beat, I'd be asking him if he condemns this sort of racist attack that his allies are engaging in. It's not just Muhammad. That's just, he's the guy that I know. These guys keep doing this. Like, this is just, they're going to do everything they can to bring back the old anti-Islamic tropes that Republicans used in Mike Rogers' heyday. Back, you know, when he was a relevant part of the party.
This segment is sponsored by the New York Times. You know, sometimes a story comes along that perfectly captures just how strange Washington has gotten. New York Times just broke the news that House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries met privately with Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law and outside advisor, to talk about potential areas where Democrats and the Trump administration could actually work together. That meeting raised several eyebrows, including this one and this one. But how did we know what happened? What was discussed, and why does it matter? That's where fact-based reporting comes in. The foundation of what we do on this show is reporting. We can have opinions, arguments, and takes about the news. God knows Will and I both have those. But somebody has to actually go out and find what happened first. In this case, New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman and Annie Carney spoke with five people with knowledge of the meeting and reported the details of this unusual conversation between Jeffries and Kushner. The Times is just one of the sources that I turn to stay informed. Whether it's the Times, the Wall Street Journal, your local newspaper, or a reporter who you trust who covers a particular beat, could be Data Republican. Good commentary depends on good reporting. The Jeffries Kushner story is just one example of the result of fact-based reporting, and now you get to decide what to think. Because without fact-based reporting like this, the rest of us are just guessing. Wherever you seek it out, nationally, locally, support fact-based reporting.
While they're engaging in this bigoted campaign, they're trying to take the moral high ground. They're trying to get on their high horse and say, oh, wait, no. It's Abdul Sayed that's actually the racist. Okay, there, it's him. It's him. He's anti-Semitic. And I'm going to pull these things that supporters have said, that other people have said, to prove to you that. And it's pernicious, because I can understand why people, particularly Jewish voters in Michigan, might be open to that line of thinking, because anti-Semitism is growing and it is a problem. But unlike on the right, the Democratic candidates time and again keep acting responsibly when issues like this bubble up. Once again, as mentioned, Mike Rogers is making his whole campaign about whatever Hassan Piker has said and trying to make Abdul El-Sayed own whatever the latest offensive thing that Hassan Piker said or did was. And I, you know, you would think that there'd be some limits on this. I mean, he was a surrogate, of course, and Abdul should have to answer about that, and he has, like, more than he's been asked about that more than anything. So he's answered it plenty. You know, the way that these guys are treating Hassan Piker, you'd think that this was like a Einhorn is Finkel, Finkel is Einhorn situation, and like these guys are the same person. But no, he's just a streamer that was a supporter of Abdul's in the primary. So Abdul keeps getting asked about all this, and the latest version of this is, you know, something that Hassan had said about anti-Semitism, and this candidate, Jeremy Moss, a Democratic candidate running in Michigan. And Abdul's campaign was asked about this, and he put out the following statement. I believe all Americans deserve the right to advocate for what they believe without fear of violence. This is particularly true for communities that have been intimidated for their beliefs in the past. My commitment to Jewish safety is the same as my commitment to the safety of my own daughters. Anti-Semitism is a scourge, and we need to address it in all its forms. And I stand against any rhetoric that puts the community at risk. He goes on, he mentioned the Hassan thing. While politicians and pundits try to make this race about a Twitch streamer, we're going to talk about gas, groceries, good schools, and healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, his statement about anti-Semitism could not be more clear. Okay? Now, people have the right to not believe him. People have the right to, you know, say they want more from him on this topic because, you know, of, again, like I said, there is a rise in anti-Semitism. We've seen the anti-Semitic attacks on the synagogue in Michigan. But one thing that he's doing is stating clearly that he's committed to Jewish safety and he opposes anti-Semitism in all its forms and he loves his Jewish brothers and sisters. Are we getting the same thing from the other side? Are we getting a statement this clear from Mike Rogers about the bigoted attacks against Muslims? I have not seen that. I think that it is important that, you know, that we have a standard here that is equal on both sides. And I don't feel like that is happening. And I feel like every time Abdul El-Sayed goes anywhere, he has to answer for whatever anti-Israel or anti-Semitic or borderline anti-Semitic or imaginarily anti-Semitic statement that some supporter of his said. And Mike Rogers just gets to walk around carte blanche having, you know, his fucking goons like smearing private citizens because they have Muslim names. So I don't think it's okay. And I think that, you know, over the last couple months of this campaign, it's important that there be equal treatment here. Because getting back to Alicia and what's up next, Mike Rogers knows he doesn't have a good economic story to tell. And so he's going to keep engaging in this trash and in this hypocritical BS in order to try to make the campaign about something else. I don't think it's going to work, but it's got to be pushed back on or else it might. So more with me and Alicia up next. Stick around for that. Subscribe to the feed. Appreciate y'all for coming here.
Good news is you don't disagree with the fact that Joe Biden brought 21% extra cost on the American families. We do
but
agree.
But we're not
that
talking about
President
Joe Biden,
Trump
though. The Biden administration is over. This
jobs.
Is the Trump. We're 2 years
it's
into
a,
the Trump
it's a contrast.
Administration.
It's a contrast, Kristen. At the end Hold of the day, the American people need to see the contrast.
I'm not sure what that contrast is supposed to be, Tim Miller, and it's as though Republicans are shocked to learn that they're in charge not just of the White House, but both chambers of Congress. I just wonder how much more difficult it gets for Tim Scott and others to continue trying to sell that message when you have Collins, when you have candidates in Montana and in Nebraska saying what this administration is doing is hurting not just Americans, but our own electoral chances.
Yeah, look, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place on their messaging because the facts are bad, right? I mean, a lot of times in political commentary, we go to, well, how is their messaging doing? Well, you know, you can't sell bad news, you know, and you can only do so much to you know, shine that turd, if you will. And so, look, I mean, Tim Scott is trying the approach of look over there at Joe Biden. That's not going to work. That's never worked for any president in history who's tried to blame their predecessor for their own failings. But I think he feels like it's the best he's got to work with. I was interested over the weekend, and I saw Tom Cotton, senator from Arkansas, who has been lockstep with Trump on everything, you know, over the past decade. He criticized Trump's move on the beef imports because they're, you know, the ranchers in Arkansas are concerned about beef, and beef prices are hitting people so hard. The fact that Tom Cotton spoke out to try to distance himself from Trump, this is a different strategy than the Tim Scott strategy, I think tells you a lot. And there was a poll that showed his opponent, who's a farmer, Hallie Schaffner. One poll showed her beating him. I think it's going to be really hard for the Democrats to win Arkansas, obviously. But like the fact that Tom Cotton feels like he has to distance himself from Trump's management of his trade war and of the economy, particularly in farm country, I think is pretty telling about how bad their political prospects are, you know, particularly in that community.
So I get that he wants to get through midterms ostensibly, but with absolutely no regard for the long tail of this, Tim, and what that means for generations of farmers, of cattle ranchers.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this Trump's in the first term, his tariffs really hurt farm country. And how did he solve that? Well, he just bailed them all out because they're a key base of his, using money from those of us who pay taxes in other industries, right? And he basically just took money from working people in other industries and did a cash transfer to farmers to deal with the consequences of his dumb trade war in the first term. This time, the trade war was bigger, and because of what's happening with Iran and, you know, other issues with the economy, He wasn't able to do that. Like, he wasn't able to put a Band-Aid on the problem that he solved by just bailing out the farmers with farm welfare. And so what you're seeing is really the economy is not great everywhere, particularly for working people, as Eddie pointed out. The economy is the worst in the rural parts of America right now. And I think that there's going to be real political ramifications for that. If you look at kind of these stretch Senate seats that the Democrats need to win, if they want to get a real majority next year, you're looking at places like Iowa, Nebraska, maybe even Kansas. They have a great candidate in Kansas, Pastor Adam Hamilton. And and I think that Trump is, has caused himself a lot of political damage in these states, and a lot of places where they voted for Democrats not that long ago. And it's in our lifetimes, our adult life, the Democrats had Senate candidates in some of these places, Iowa, South Dakota, et cetera. So I think it's a real political issue for him.
Okay, Tim, Eddie, and Bharat are still with us. Yes, Tim, same. Canada does have a military. Canadian soldiers gave their lives fighting alongside Americans in Afghanistan. I'm not sure what any of what Duffy said has to do with anything, much less trade talks, or why the transportation secretary is chiming in. But to me, it just all adds to the cauldron of chaos.
Yeah, Duffy, the lies and the smears about Canada are offensive. I mean, Canadians died defending us after we were attacked in 9/11. You might remember Canada kind of housed Americans who were on flights in the air that had to be rediverted during 9/11, and they went to Canada for a couple of days. There are all these stories about how well that they were treated, while we were dealing with the aftermath of that. So it's extremely offensive and stupid. Sean Duffy probably just doesn't know anything because he doesn't read. But in addition to that, I think that there is some real lessons here for Democrats domestically from Mark Carney, because this is tough in Canada. I mean, like, there are real ramifications for the people of Canada here, not agreeing to a bad deal. I mean, a bad deal would be better economically for Canada than no deal. But Carney is looking at the long game. The Canadians seem to be behind him. And he's really standing up to Trump and just saying no. And I think that this is what a lot of people, domestically are looking for from the Schumer and Jeffries leadership in the Democratic Party. Carney's kind of a centrist technocrat guy. And I think he's providing a model for Democrats here on what people are looking for when it comes to standing up to this administration when they're, acting crazily and corrupt and irresponsible like they are in this trade war.